Dash number 5868, Horton, Monday, part 37.
You mentioned that later on in the war there were people who did get shell shock and so on. Did any of the people in that first baptism of fire, besides Billy Hollandine, did anyone show any sort of particular fear?
None whatever. No. No, I can't say that anyone was worried whatever. You began to realise then what it was all about. Mm-hmm. And then from then, the next day then, we was actually taken up into the front line at night. You couldn't change in the daytime. And then that was the real thing in the trenches. And that was the first taste that we had of real trench warfare. And you daredn't show your head or anything then. I mean, if you wanted to see no man's land, your trench, barbed wire, no man's land, barbed wire and German trench. And all you used to do then was just have a quick look and down. You daredn't look like that. If you look many seconds, well, they used to have snipers, you see. Well, we did the same, have snipers. And they'd have rifles set all along different parts of the line. There'd be special snipers, German and British. Mm. And they'd have a section, perhaps, their sniper would perhaps cover 100 yards, and he'd have his rifle set so you couldn't see it between sandbags. And then once anybody spotted, well, then it was just a matter of quickly firing,
And what were the trenches like? Describe, you know, when you went into them, how big are they and what were they like?
Well, now, as near as I could tell you, that'd be, well, from there to here, what would that be? About
a couple of feet?
No, more than that. What? It was a trench was wide enough for you to walk along and put from back to front, you could stand there. That'd be almost 6 foot across.
Yeah.
See, and that'd be about 6 foot deep. Mm-hmm. I'm just giving the average. 6 foot deep. And then you had a fire step. See, that was sandbags. Mm-hmm. You'd have the sandbags along. And then your parapet on top. That'd be almost always, you'd be sandbags on top in front, see?
Yes.
And so that you would... when you wanted to fire, you'd stand on the sandbags or want to see anything. You just climbed up on the sandbags, and that'd be about as high as this is.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so you could see that you could sit down there and rest.
Yeah.
When you're 4 hours, or if you'd sit there and rest if it was nice, fine. Yeah. And if you was on duty, it was your 2 hours on. You'd stand there, and then every little while you'd stand up on the fire step and have a quick look.
Yeah. What about this young chap, Albert French, who's less of those, was sandbagging when he was machine gun. Now, what was sandbagging?
No, that was it. Now, at night, see, perhaps during the day, they'd shell you. Well, I'd probably blow a lump of your barbed wire away and a bundle of these sandbags on top of the front of your trench, you see, what you call your parapet. Mm-hmm. Well, then at night,
I see.
You used to get out the back of the trenches at night and fill sandbags and then put them back where they'd been blew down.
I see. Yeah.
And where you got your sandbags mainly was... where you cut a dugout. See, now as quick as I can tell you, you're 6 foot down in a trench, see?
Yeah.
Well, now you want a dugout, and you cut in the back of that trench, shovel it in, fill sandbags, see?
Yeah.
And cut it back, and then that the top of that, cut it deep enough so it sort of come level with the top of your trench, and then you'd cover that over with the corrugated sheeting, and you'd fill the sandbags that you dug the trench, dug your dugout from, fill that, and then cover the top of the top of the corrugated iron.
Yes.
And that'd keep your splinters of shells out.
Yes, I see.
And that was your dugout at the back of your trench.
I see.
And filling sandbags is how you very often got hit during that.
Yeah.
That was during the night.
Yes. Did you did you find that the trenches were muddy when you went there? Oh, you went there during the summer.
Oh, blimey. In the winter, you were sloshing along over your shoe tops in water or slush or snow. And still had to stay. Oh, yes.
So, let's go back. You're in the front line at Armentiers.
No, Plug Street Wood then. No. Oh, we moved from there, yeah.
How long were you at Armentiers for then?
Oh, only a few days.
And it was just a little bit of shelling, a little bit
of
sniper
fire,
nothing...
Nothing important, no. Okay. Then, then we marched then from there to Plug Street Wood. Now, it's called Plug Street Wood because it was a large wood and the trenches was all like several fields away from the wood, see?
Yes.
Only the wood was the British side.
Yes.
And the trenches was outside the wood. British and German trenches was outside. And we took over then, the whole of the 48th Territorial Division took over from a regular army unit. You see, the Territorials took over from the regulars long before the ordinary joining up chaps went out there, because they were partially trained, you see, pre-war. That's where we took over then and took that part of the line.
So you were at Plug, you got to Plug Street Wood. What happened to you there?
Well, then we was there some time, and some of the things I told you about...
Well, tell them again.
I said, Carol.
Yes, tell me.
Yes, well then, oh blimey, they made me Lance Corporal there. I don't know what the hell for, but they did.
Why did they?
I don't know.
You hadn't lost many men then. It wasn't.
No.
So showing officer potential.
I don't know. They made it, but I lost them. I had them two or three times. I used to sew them on with butter. I slid all. Anyway, I was a Lance Corporal then. I'll start from that point. And now. What towers like? There's so many towers I can tell you there. Do you want to hear about Sid Cowell getting wounded?
Yeah, well, I mean, tell me in sort of in order if you like. Tell the story.
All right then. We had a routine there in this wood at the back. Now you moved up, and you had several weeks in that wood, and you'd have about 4 days, perhaps 4 days or five, in the front line trench, see, and you wouldn't move out of that trench where you went. You'd be here, you'd go there, and you'd stay there that 4 or 5 days. You wouldn't have your clothes off, and you wouldn't have a sleep, proper sleep. It was all the time, it was 2 hours on and four off, day and night, right through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, after several days, you'd come out of those trenches. You couldn't get out in the light, naturally. And then another company in the wood would come out and relieve you, come into your front line, take over, and then you'd drift back into the wood. And in that wood, there were sections of eight. And I've got an old photo somewhere. It was marked up in the wood, Regent Street, Oxford Street, the Mall. All signs, big signs like that on trees where they'd been nearly all blown down.
Yeah.
And that was the different sections in the wood, so that different regiments knew where they were, you know,
direct. They were like trenches, were they? In
the woods? No, nothing whatever, in just a clear wood.
Just a clear wood. But, yeah.
Just a clear
but
wood.
Were there many trees actually standing at this point?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The trees that were blue would be the tops blew off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See?
Yeah, yeah.
I've got an old photo, I'll get hold of it, I'll get them done for it. Cut out the Daily Mirror. A week before I was wounded there. Well, now you used to go in that wood and rest, and you had your own little graveyard in there. Each regiment had its own little graveyard in Plug Street Woods, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. And you'd have several days there rest, and then you'd go back in the trenches again, see? Take over again, and that company would relieve you and go back in the wood, and then you would have another 4 or 5 days. Well, now, after a short time, you came out for a proper rest. And that was a village, perhaps 7 or 8 miles behind the line, you know. Mm-hmm. And there you celebrated. You was paid, and there you straight away, when you got your pay, you simply went in, and every other house was a restaurant, what they call them.
Cafe,
yeah, you know what I mean. And there you had eggs, chips, and champagne, and vin blanc, and all that, and got sussed and enjoyed your time while you was out. Yeah. Perhaps you'd have a week or fortnight in this village rest.
Yeah.
Officers, of course, gradually they took the turns and went off to Paris for a few days.
Oh, did they?
Yes, they. They could afford to go. You see, it was sort of a short leave from the front line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that you could relax. The ordinary soldier went in his stamina.
Yeah.
And they used to have a big pan of eggs, perhaps 3 or 4 dozen eggs all frizzling away, and chips. And you used to sit there and scoff eggs and chips and a bottle of vin blanc, and there was only a few coppers.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What about the women? Did they bring women to the front, or
no?
You mentioned before, not to the front, to these places. Because
oh yes, they lived a normal life.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The strange thing was, they wouldn't be driven out their homes, yeah. Not even when they was being shelled.
So they were carrying on, sort of.
They carried on the civilian, yes. The French civilian life, the same as if there were no war, a few miles behind the line.
What about, you mentioned to me before about going off and seeing women in Paris, the officers. Did they bring prostitutes up to
No, I never saw one.
Oh.
No, never did. No. Us chaps used to get, us chaps used to have a bit of fun with the gals, but I can't say that I never saw, not up there, not for prostitutes. If you wanted them, the ordinary soldier wanted them, well, you were all right down at the base, such as Rouen, Le Havre, and them places,
oh, I see. Yeah,
you
yeah,
see,
right,
well,
right the, yeah,
there was
the
a red lamp out of every other house. You know what I'm going to mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But as to right up at the front, no.
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 What
just ordinary village people.
But, and the, you know, when you were there, I've seen pictures of things like sports days and all this sort of thing, and football matches and all this. That always take place, did it?
No, that was well beyond the lines.
Oh, I see.
Oh, well, your pleasure there was
just eating.
And made your own bit of fun. Because you could play football and that sort of thing, but we used to have a sing-song, and there was one or two jolly good singers there in our mob. one of them especially, I can give you his name, Phil Wills from Wolverton. He's dead and gone now, but he was a blooming good singer.
Yeah. What sort of songs would you sing then?
Why, songs that made you cry. Put it that way.
Yeah.
That was his sort, you know, Mother McCree and old songs like that.
Yeah, can you give me some other titles? I don't know Mother McCree, I must
say. Yeah. Irish songs and The Mountains of Mourn. Mm. And I still have to think of the different old-time ballads. There used to be, yeah, you know, the old 1900 ballads, yes, that you hear, right, on the... Right. What are those sort of songs? And he could play a banjo. Well, we used to have sleeping barns, you see. When you come out there, the troops, the officers, sometimes slept in the farmhouse. They'd sleep in the farmhouse. But the troops used to sleep in these great big French barns, mm-hmm, all straw, and used to lay in heaps all over it on straw.
Yeah.
And even then, when you slept there, we used to sleep with our arms through the rifle sling, in case you were rushed out in the night, you know, breakthrough, yeah, at the, yeah, front.
Yeah.
Yeah, you slept there with your clothes on and your arm through your rifle sling and sleep there. But they used to have this old lanterns hanging in the barn, you know, mm-hmm, and old Phil and them would get up and give a song and we'd all get singing, you know, and mm, pass the time away like that.
Lovely, yeah, yeah. So, this would happen, you know, you'd be 4 or 5 days at the front.
Yes.
Come back to this halfway position. You go
in
back.
The boat, in the wood.
And about every month you'd go back, would you?
Yeah, but every month or so you'd go back and have a break.
Tell me a little bit about this graveyard. When people died, they were actually brought back.
Yeah, home. Just wrapped in a blanket.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was a strange feeling, because where we was in the wood, there's bits of brooks and that run through a wood, you know, there was there. Well, there is in nearly every wood a brook of some sort. And they'd had what they call duck boards all through. Yes. The footpaths through there was slush and mud. It was all duck boards, we called them, you walked on. Well, from where we always used to pass by that little grave, the book's graveyard, and... because you went up at night, you couldn't go in the daytime, it's impossible to be seen across open ground. And we used to have a pass by our graveyard, and I never forgot it. I used to have a funny feeling as you went by it, you know, just close by. I used to look at that and I used to think, oh, blimey, I wonder if I should be in there next time. You had that feeling come all across you.
Mm.
Just the wooden cross there. And
how did you feel the first time that anyone that was, if you like, you knew well here,
yeah,
died?
Yeah.
How did you feel?
You never took no more notice of that than if it was a cat.
Really?
That's strange. I've told you before, you're not human beings, you know. I'm certain you're not. Because anybody that died, that were killed, you just say, oh, blimey, he's got it, has he? You, that's the only comment or only thought you ever had.
Yeah.
Even your mates, you sort of took it for granted that was it.
Yeah.
You didn't, like now at home or ordinary times, you'd worry for weeks about it.
That's
a
right.
Friend dying.
That's right.
But there you didn't. It didn't cross your mind because it happened so much that, well, you thought, well, you could be the next one yourself.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
There was no emotion.
Whilst you were at Plug Street, when going to and fro from the very front line trenches, there wasn't a battle at this time. This was just the normal.
There was no battle at all, and I can tell you this, that practically the whole of the war, there was very few real battles.
Mm-hmm.
You can, now all the tales that you... Now, you want me to tell you about joining up?
Yes.
Yes, well now, as near as I can recall, my old schoolmate, we was mates from school days, right the way through the war, even today, and he's still alive. Well, now, to join up, of course, the war broke out August 4th, as you know, and the Territorials was called up a day or two in front. Well, now, my old mate and I, we stood together on the Sunday evening. War started on the Tuesday. Following Sunday, we decided we'd join up. Now, he was a butcher, I was a woodworker, coach body maker in the railway works. Well, now, we decided we'd join, because everyone was joining, and we decided we'd go to the recruiting office, Aylesbury. In, we'd join the REs, engineers, and went to the recruiting office at Aylesbury. Well, that was stacked out. Temple Square it was there, and it was simply packed out when men joining. We waited and waited, and we had a few drinks, because prior to that we didn't drink much, always training, and we went and had a drink. Eventually we came back, the square was still crowded. We went away and had another drink. We came back and eventually we went through and joined. Well, they formed you up in sections. There was a Lance Corporal there. And he formed you up in sections and marched around Aylesbury, billeted you in civilian premises. Now, I was billeted at a pub called the Saracen's Head, and I believe that's still there. And in the morning, we'd had a few drinks and not been used to it too much, we was a bit muddled. In the morning, when I got up to come down to breakfast, my old mate Sid wasn't there. And in a few minutes after breakfast, the Lance Corporal came around and formed us up, marched us away to do a bit of training to begin with. And I said to this corporal, I said, are we in the REs? REs? He said, no. He said, you're in the Bucks Territorials. Well, we didn't know. But eventually, I'm pleased we did, because there was a jolly good mob.
Can we go back a bit?
Yes.
And the first thing is, why were you so keen to join up?
Because it was, in those days, everyone joined up. As soon as the war started, everyone, all the youth of the nation, flocked to join. Because, as I've said before, it was taught it at school. In those days, that everyone was taught history, geography, which proved, as the old saying, Britannia rules the waves, the sun never set on the British Empire, and you was big King Dicks, you had to be. You thought you was taught that you owned the world practically, and everyone simply joined up in crowds.
How old were you at the time?
I was 20.
Hmm. What sort of, did you have any girlfriends or anything like that in Braddell at the time? Anything to stop you going, if you like?
No, we had plenty, you know what I mean?
No steady
There was very, very few of us that that had regular girls. Mm. There was one or two. But perhaps I should tell you the interesting point, that our mates had already joined the Territorials prior to the war. Mm. And when our Sid Carroll and myself, when we were sent to join them at Chelmsford, it was a real laugh, because, as they said, we got you now. And I'm glad they did, because they were their own schoolmates.
Yeah. What was the what was your feeling? Were you afraid about going away to join up?
No. It was a novelty. You look forward to it, because everyone, after serving an apprenticeship in the railways, had to go at the age of 21. Well, me being 20, last year of apprenticeship, I'd got to go away in any case, but to go to a war, it seemed magnificent. You looked forward to it. You was eager to get there to see what it was like. But as I say, history at school gave you a feeling that it was marvellous to be able to go and fight in a war.
You had no thought about being killed, right?
No, not the slightest thought. Never entered your head. No, not that was on talking about right at the first week of the war, joining, yes.
How long did people think the war was going to last?
Oh, everyone. It was the general of opinion, and I've said it times, and others have said the same, that you had to go quick in case it all finished. You couldn't picture, as a youth in those days, you couldn't picture any country with an army big enough to defeat the British. You couldn't picture it at all. And you expected that all, well, 2 or 3 months, but the most, you thought.
Well, how did your parents feel? Because you were living at home at this time.
Yes, yes. Well, it was accepted. Parents accepted that sort of thing because the children were joining up as fast as they could. So much so that conscription was not even thought of for a year.
What you're saying is that your mother and father encouraged you to go, or...?
No, they didn't query. They didn't encourage. Well, I don't know. It was only 10 days, you see, after that broke out, so they didn't query it. No, when I said I was going, they never gave a second thought to that I shouldn't, because everyone else had gone.
Yes. So you went with Sid Carroll, just you and Sid Carroll?
Yes, we joined together.
On the train?
Yes.
To Aylesbury?
To Aylesbury.
Yes.
And joined up at Aylesbury.
Right, so we're now, you joined up, you found out you're in the Bucks Territorials.
That's
right. What happened next?
You had a few weeks training at Aylesbury, till they formed quite a large bunch there, and then you was fitted with uniforms. I should say we were there perhaps a month, roughly a month, and then you was transferred from Aylesbury to the main Buckinghamshire Battalion, which was in training at Chelmsford, and there you joined the regiment, as the saying is.
How about in the early days when you were at Aylesbury, what sort of training did you do and what was it like?
Well, you learnt ordinary drill, marching drill, and a certain amount of musketry drill, you know, with a rifle, you know, slow palm, shoulder arms.
What was it like then? You were just in civilian clothes then, were you?
Oh, we was in civilian clothes for a matter of 3 weeks at least, yeah. And the strange thing, well, it wasn't strange, but there was all types of people there, youth. There was men, chaps there off of a farm, some with a muffler, an old slough chap, and you had another one there with a dressed up to the nine pinstripes trousers, you know what I mean, lovely clothes, right from the very rich to the very poor, the youth, all mixed together.
And
yes.
And everyone was sort of keen to get at the
And they were all keen to get to the regiments and to get abroad. Strange as it may seem, they were keen to get abroad.
Had you, in fact, in your youth, actually, what was the farthest afield you'd been from New Bradwell?
Nowhere, except weekends of athletic meeting, sport.
Yes.
And different kinds of sport, but... that's the farthest I don't think I ever spent as a night away from home, as the saying is. Yeah. Not to go away for a few days,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, never went for holiday even, no. The main holiday then for the youth of the day was joining the Territorials and having a fortnight's training away each year. That was holiday, but of course I wasn't in that.
So you got to Chelmsford by train, did you?
Yes, by train, yeah. But the old original Bucks, the Territorials then, was called up a day or two in front, and I think they marched most of the way to Chelmsford. I know they went Dunstable Way and then done a lot
that's
of
right,
marching.
That's what Arthur Willis
like
said. That's what Arthur
But
Willis.
I wasn't in them then, you see. Mm-hmm. So I joined them at Chelmsford, and...
Who else was there from Bradwell?
What, from Bradwell? The names?
Yes.
Oh, blimey, I can tell you. Well, just our little party then. The names I can tell you were Joe Scragg, Fatty O'Dell, Sid Carroll, Arthur Baxter, Tommy Barton, That was the little bunch that we used to play cards, you see. That was their little bunch.
What about Len Carroll? Was he in that bunch or not?
Len Carroll was there, but he didn't join till later.
Oh, I see.
No.